Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your yarn and circle, the Murray Grapevine. It is National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev. Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know, at BBM Bumbabrit Media, 98.7 FM. We go via NERS, National News Radio Service, and you can have your sober callings on that. Deadly number 1-800-422-416. I'd like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land we broadcast from, and to all our traditional owners across this deadly country of ours, welcome back to National Talk Black. Have you say your mob, yarn up strong, and the world will live living at the moment, 2020, yes, and we're talking about COVID-19, that's what I'm talking about, the world upside down at the moment, but adapting to the situation. Some people aren't adapting, some governments aren't adapting to the situation. Victorian governments have wasted two decades of opportunity to address the state's housing crisis, selling surplus public land that could have been used for 11,000 public housing units, new analysts reveals. And we're going to catch up a yarn there with Professor Libby Porter, who's the lead researcher on this project. Professor Libby, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. So we're living in a different world, are we not, Professor Libby?
We certainly are, yes. but we've got good opportunity to fix some things, I think.
Well, exactly. And they say oil always rises to the top in regard to the pandemic, and it has exposed exposes problems that are before us that government and people tend to hide away from. But housing in this situation, in a conversation we're having regarding Victoria public housing, so enlighten us, please.
Sure. Well, our research has shown that successive governments here in Victoria, and this would be a very similar kind of situation in different states and territories, have basically squandered the opportunity to deal with housing need and housing stress. So, I mean, everyone in Australia probably knows, and I think first people know in particular, that we are in a situation and have been for a long time of housing crisis. And since 2000, basically the year 2000, Victorian governments have sold about 578 hectares of public land, about 80% of which could have been used, like they're in good residential areas, in the right zones and so on, for public housing. And instead they haven't been. They've been sold to basically for private development.
So who's at fault here? I mean, don't we have town planners, and don't they look at the vision for the future, and especially, well, that's the most important thing, to house our Australians, yeah?
Oh, I totally agree. And we, of course, do have those kinds of people. One of the things that is really interesting here, I think, is the way in which public land is sort of sold by stealth. There's a whole series of kind of decisions that go on, driven usually, by, certainly in Victoria, by treasury functions that require government departments to get rid of what they call surplus public land. Now, of course, public land is never surplus, and we need to urgently, I think, change the system and the way we approach dealing with the most important sort of public asset that we have. I say all this, of course, and want to acknowledge that I'm here on Wurundjeri land and want to acknowledge traditional owners here, and also that public land isn't public. It's, of course, unceded Aboriginal land, and that conversation needs to be really central to this whole issue.
Well, when we're talking housing, we're talking necessities in life, and we're talking about our First Nation people, well, all Australians, you know, that should be front and centre, should it not?
It should absolutely be front and centre. So currently, here in Victoria at least, we've got around 90 to 100,000 people on the housing wait list. That's 90 to 100,000 people who have put their hand up and said, I'm in housing stress, I need help. There's a whole lot of people, hundreds of thousands more, who haven't put their hand up, who are just in housing stress. And of course, many of those peoples are Indigenous peoples. And at the same time, we're selling the very thing that could affordably deliver the very thing that everybody needs, which is secure, safe, affordable shelter, dwelling.
And what adds to that also is a an opportunity for full employment, for the building industry as such, and, providing jobs, yes?
That's exactly right. And as we face this extraordinary economic downturn, one of the things that a lot of people are currently calling for is a stimulus package that puts public housing right at the centre of that stimulus package. So we need to change the model for how we deliver housing in this country. We have needed to do that for a long time, but the pandemic just exposes hopefully some of the kind of central truths to that. And I think we all need to really press our governments and press in our public conversations that importance.
So, Professor Libby, with you as a lead researcher on this project and with your findings, what do you do then? Do you take it to the minister in regarding housing in Victoria? Where do we go from here?
Yeah, we're certainly trying to do that and trying to build basically coalitions and alliances with other voices who are calling for very similar things. We need to get our heads round and ministers and governments need to get their heads round what the policy changes need to be. So we need to change the way we deal with so-called surplus public land, which I would argue is never really surplus.
Yes.
We need to change the definitions on that stuff. So we're trying to do those things and also just educate the public really and put information out there that the public can get to know.
And when you look at a solution to a problem, this in actual fact will solve a lot of problems. When you feel when someone's got a house and a roof over their head, then you're talking a strong foundation. Now I can go and get a job and pay for the rent. Now I can make my life better, my family better, my relationship with my wife better, whatever the case may be. It can solve all problems too.
Exactly right, and we know how important. I mean, housing is being securely housed, as we know, is just fundamental to everybody's health and well-being. If you can't do those sort of regular things in your life, keep yourself safe, keep your family safe, look after people, learn, work, all of those things, you can't pretty much do anything in your life. You're not the full person that you need to be. So housing is essential to that, and we need to deal with a housing crisis by building public housing and provide that necessary safe, affordable, secure housing for everybody. That's a win-win solution. I don't understand why governments aren't jumping at it and taking it on and saying this is the way out of this pandemic.
Exactly. And look, here's our conversation here on National Talk Black Government Do Listeners program. So adding to the conversation and adding to support in regarding us having this conversation. Professor Libya, thank you very much. All the best to you and your daily team. And look, stay safe, eh?
Thanks very much. All to all of you too. Thanks.
Bye-bye. That's Professor Libby Porter, who's the lead researcher on the project regarding housing in Victoria. And Victoria governments have need to step up regarding the housing problem. And also it's a plug for employment as well in regarding the building industry. And look, it's a no-brainer really if you look at it. And that's all states and territories providing housing for, especially with First Nation people and especially in communities. Hello, go figure. You know, add to the conversation, Mob, here on National Talk Black. Want to hear from you, 1-800-422-416. That's the number you need to call. Yarnum with the Bully One. Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from McCurry. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black, and we're live at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go via NERS, National News Radio Service. Give me a call, 1-800-422-416.
My name's Raven and you're listening to Talk Black on BBN 98.7 FM.
Good morning, your daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from your First Nation radio station here in Cairns, with your daily program. That's National Talk Black, and we're here at the Murray radio station, BBM 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service, and you can give us a call and have your say on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, families of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander deaths in custody call for Australian governments to urgently release people from prison to prevent COVID-19 deaths. We're going to have a yarn out with Latoya Rule. She's the sibling of Wayne Fallon Morrison, and on behalf of her brother, got her on the line now. Latoya, a very good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. First of all, who your mob were you from?
So my mob from Wiradjuri, but they live in Sydney now, and I've been living on Kaurna land now for my whole life. My father's Māori as well. So Kaurna land's in Adelaide, for those who don't know, all the way down south.
Yes.
And my brother, Wayne Fallon Morrison, is also a Gugudhur and Wirangu on the west coast. So,
all right.
Yeah, that's our context of where we've grown up.
Beautiful, deadly footprint there. Thank you. And now we're talking about our mob incarcerated and reaching out for the government to urgently act on releasing people from prison to prevent COVID-19 deaths. And look, your advocates with your brother's spirits and to what's happening with our mob in prison. Where are we at with it, and families are getting behind this push, so to speak. So where are we at with it, Latoya?
Yeah, so we've got a bunch of families who are looking at people in prison right now and thinking about how we can, I guess, best support mob in prison. You know, all people in prison, but mostly mob.
Yep.
So we've got people from...
Well, the mob are more vulnerable to COVID-19, aren't they?
100%. Yeah, we know our health issues and we know that our mobs have gone through these issues before. Hashtag colonisation. So,
yes.
You know, those intergenerational and systemic links can absolutely be made. So we've got people from families like Auntie Tanya Days, April Days, so her daughter. We've got Michaela Reynolds from New South Wales and her brother who was Nathan Reynolds. You know, we've got a good bunch of mob on this campaign who I guess, have been left behind after our loved ones have died in custody. And then on top of that, we've got a bunch of mob from NATSLS, National Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander Legal Service, Deb Curoy from Sisters Inside. And so, we've got some letters out. We've got a letter and a petition that we need mob to sign. Some of the things we're calling for, one of the main overarching things is to get mob out of prison. So that is, you know, like you just said, our elders, First Nation people, those with diabetes, heart conditions, HIV and AIDS, chronic health issues, disabilities. We need to stop criminalising mob. So police must not be given extra powers during this pandemic, because we know how many of our mob, just particularly people like Miss Dew, who passed away in WA, you know, for things like fines.
Fines, that's right. Yeah, ticket fines, whatever. Yes. Very, very minor offences.
Absolutely. You know, petty crimes. People who have been out on the street for even things as jaywalking here in SA, you know, that will land you in lockup. And so, we're thinking about those things and not giving police extra powers. People staying out of prisons during this time, knowing that our mob are incarcerated, you know, 17 times more than other mobs. And then, you know, care and protect our mobs. So things like transportation when people do have COVID in the prisons and how they are being isolated. Somebody like my brother who, you know, passed away after over 14 corrections officers used their body weight to, restrain Wayne and put a spit hood over his face, handcuffed his feet and his ankles and his wrists and carried him to the prison van face down where he, you know, was, I guess, suffocated. He passed away of spit hood asphyxia. And so are we sure that the way that mob is going to be transferred and transported, you know, that's not going to happen to them and that those processes are in place to make sure that they, you know, that there's surveillance? Because for my brother, there wasn't surveillance in the van.
Yes.
You know? And so that really protected those corrections officers, and we're still going through our court, and it's been almost 4 years now. and they just lost the battle against the Supreme Court to try to kick our coroner off the case, but yeah, he stayed on, so that's good. But,
yep,
you know, we need to actually think about those processes, about how our mobs have passed away in custody and how that, you know, make sure that doesn't happen again during this process. And then support more back into the community. So mental health support, you exactly know, making sure people who are deemed at risk are not...
So we've always had problems regarding incarceration with our mob and the treatment of our mob in being incarcerated. Now with COVID-19 on, it just highlights it all the more. And if the government don't act in regarding releasing of our mob from prisons, I heard the description of another stationary princess, Ruby Princess, so to speak. If a COVID-19 went through a prison, it would just go through like hellfire, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And just before I was having an answer to you about, you know, the global, what we've seen already around the globe and how that can happen here in Australia as well, and how, you know, in Brazil we've had 4 prisons. All the prisoners actually escape because, you know, they don't want to be subject to these harsh, violent conditions of the prison, being locked down, not having any family visits.
Mm.
You know, so they all escape for their own safety. And then we've seen...
But also trying to escape a virus as well. That's what they're trying to do.
100%. Like, they're literally... Everybody in prison right now, we know in Australia, nobody's getting... access because, like, to any kind of a support that they need in terms of visits and, you know, that mental health stuff because of COVID. And it's just not being handled the way it needs to be. Like, people shouldn't be in prison right now at all. They can be released. We've known around the world people have had early releases. Hundreds of thousands of people around the world, their governments have released them from prison knowing that right now they just don't need to be there. But Australia has not released one person due to COVID-19, except I think maybe through other ways, by saying, you know, we'll trial your court dates, when somebody can go for parole. We'll trial your parole dates a little bit earlier.
Sure,
that's
sure.
That's not saying we are going to release you for your health and safety due to COVID, you know.
But also with prisoners who have got some high medical concerns. I mean, if not elderly, you would look at that as first cabs off the rank, so to speak, wouldn't you? Would you not?
Absolutely. Yep. And that's what we call for. You know, we need to actually get people out of prisons. So we wrote up a national letter with a big list of demands, and over, you know, 40 different families were represented in signing that, and that obviously is so many other families who they also represent in that. So, you know, we all sent that to Cabinet. Cabinet did respond 2 days ago. So the Parliament, you know, in Canberra did respond to some of those demands. But
and what was the response? Are they talking about it? Are they looking at it? Are they voting on it? Or where are we at?
Yeah, they've just said that they'll support, you know, the issues of, like, mob back into prison and the way that they, I guess how they'll be isolated and stuff. But not once did they say that they're going to release. Do mass release.
Mm.
Not once did they focus on our elderly or Aboriginal people particularly, except when it said about back into community and community supports. You know, it's just really slack.
Would you say, Latoya, it's fair to say that in the conversation we're talking about, if not a compromise, so if people on minor offences are released, or people who have got a high sensitive health problem release, or elderly release, and post COVID-19, then they can come back if they need to complete their sentence. Are you open to that sort of conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we believe everybody should be released, that there's no one crime that's essentially worse in the way of colonial crime and stuff like that. However, absolutely, that's the first thing. Like, we've listed those ones with those particular issues, you know. There's no reason why people can't be on home detention or on parole.
Yep.
You know, we know, like Wayne, for instance, my brother Wayne, he was only 6 days on remand.
Yeah.
Now, he was in a high to medium security prison, Yatala prison here in SA, right? And he wasn't taken to the remand centre. And we know that in our remand centre here on Garnerland, up to 2 years, there's up to people in there who haven't been sentenced and who are serving their two-year sentence in the remand centre. So why are people right now on remand still in prisons during COVID-19 at least? There's so many people on remand who, you know, you're not guilty till, you're innocent till proven guilty, right?
Exactly.
So why are they not in their homes on, home detention until those court cases come up? Like, we could literally clear our remandee prisons, but the government aren't thinking of radical actions like that. And that's why we need to be here, you know, knocking on their doors.
Exactly. Well, the people have spoken, Latoya. That's the number one message. And majority of people who have spoken are people who've lost loved ones through deaths in custody. So you've got a bit of weight there in regarding your push or for your voices to be heard, so to speak, to Parliament. Thank you very much for sharing, and look, all the best to you and your family, and we as First Nation people, we are all on the same page regarding love and respecting our mob who are incarcerated. Thank you for sharing, you take care, and stay safe too, eh?
Yeah, deadly. If I could just ask everybody if they could please sign our petition, alsnewsouthwalesact.org.au, free our people. We really need you all to get behind us and each other for that aid. We protect each other. So,
all right. Say that again, please. That line, the webpage there.
The ALS. It's all one word in the toolbar. ALS New South Wales ACT. So that's all the acronym. .org.au/free our people.
Too deadly. Thank you, my friend. You take care, eh?
You too.
Bye, bye, Latoya.
Bye for now.
Too deadly, having a beautiful yarn there with Latoya Rule, sibling of Wayne Fellow Morrison, who's Wayne himself incarcerated, death in custody, and family as we have Michaela Reynolds, sister of Nathan Reynolds, Miss Rowe, auntie of G.J. Rowe, April Watson, daughter of auntie Tanya Day, and Patricia Fisher. So they're the people who've had their loved ones death in custody, and they're behind the push for releasing prisoners with COVID-19 about. So look, love going out to all our mob out there and to our brothers and sisters who are incarcerated. Look, stay strong. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Add to the conversation, 1-800-422-416. Call the number, yarn with Bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Recurry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM, Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation. Thanks to News, National News Radio Service. Give the Murray a call. Let's have a yarn, you mob. 1-800-422-416.
G'day, this is Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7. I remember the day.
This is the story country. Gonna boom, ba, boo-loo-loo. These are the story waters. Gonna boom, ba, boo-loo-loo. Oh, come and sit beside me, where the water flows and flows. These waters Chabukai, Falana and Dani Nigerai, Yura Binamunda.
Yeah, good you, good you, Bullaroo. It's the story waters here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, your mob. Give us a call, 1-800-422-416.
if you call the number. Yana with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray Finucurry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumper Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NURS, National News Radio Service. So give us a call, have your say in Yarn Up Strong here on National Talk Black. The world we're living in, COVID-19, is about staying safe. And look, the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, that's RACGP, is helping Australians understand why the COVID safe application is safe, how it works, and what people need to do to play their part in combating COVID-19. We're going to have a chat now with Dr. Christina Delange on the line. Dr. Christina, very good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you very much. Where are you based, Doctor?
I'm based down in Brisbane, so Queenslander as well.
Good, represent.
Work an Aboriginal Medical Service in Brisbane.
Oh, lovely. All right, fantastic. Thank you very much for coming to the program. So, yeah, we are living in an upside-down world at the moment and doing what we can to keep ourselves safe. There's no vaccine for COVID-19, but they do have a application safe, COVID-19, COVID-safe application. Please explain and tell us about, and so we can understand the combating of COVID-19, please, Doctor.
Yeah, thanks so much, Trevor. So essentially, COVID Safe is a mobile app that's been designed to help keep Australians safe and healthy through expediting or fast-tracking, I guess you could say, the contact tracing mechanisms. Now, there'll be some viewers, or some listeners, I should say, that would be wondering what is contact tracing. Essentially, when someone gets diagnosed with coronavirus or COVID-19, the public health unit would contact them and would sit down with them and attempt to go back through everywhere that they'd been, the people that they might have come in contact with over the time that they've been infectious, and then they would attempt to then make contact with anybody who would have come in contact and been exposed. And as you can imagine, this is a pretty time-intensive, labour-intensive process, and has the ability to miss people sort of forget where they've been, and it relies as well on trying to get sort of public announcements out, you know, if you were in this shopping centre or if, you know, and then having people respond. So there's, you know, the possibility of missing people. So what this app is really designed to do is to expedite that process and to provide a very quick and fast way of contacting people that may have been exposed to the virus, so that they can appropriately be tested or instructed to self-isolate or self-quarantine where that's necessary.
And so people have that hesitation regarding doing it because of in regard to privacy. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really great question because I think it's something that's come up a lot and people are always worried when there's a government app on your phone. Well, we're really, from the RACGP's perspective, we're really reassuring the communities that this is a safe app to be able to download. Essentially, what the app is doing is it's creating a digital handshake with anyone you might have come in contact with. It's not actually tracking your location. It's got no GPS type facility associated with it, so it's not in any way tracking where you've been, what you've been up to. It's simply tracking the date, time, distance, and the duration of contact you might have had with another person. So it does that through the Bluetooth with your phone. Mm-hmm. If you've got the app downloaded and someone behind you at the grocery store has the app downloaded, it would record those four things: date, time, distance, and duration. It doesn't actually record, the location specifically. So that just then becomes a really effective way for those people to be traced if it's necessary. We know that the window of risk is 15 minutes in contact with someone for within 1.5 metres. So the app can, you know, really reliably trace whether that has occurred. The information is stored on the phone. It's securely encrypted there, so it's very safe on the phone. It's not able to be accessed by anybody else. Even the person who has the app can't access the information. So if you wanted to find out who that person behind you is, it's not like you can get on the app and try and see who it was. It's all encrypted and all specific codes as opposed to recording specific people's names. And you'd only the information could only be accessed if you were actually diagnosed with COVID-19 and then you gave your consent to the state or territory public health unit to be able to access that information and to contact those people that might be at risk.
So, Dr. Christina, after the, post COVID-19, and then that's all deleted as such, we wouldn't need the app anymore, would we?
Absolutely, that's right. So once the pandemic is over, the information will be deleted permanently. If at any point someone decided to delete the app, they're absolutely able to as well. And the information actually is deleted on a rolling cycle of 21 days, because that's essentially, once you pass 21 days, someone I came in contact with 21 days ago, it's no longer relevant because I couldn't have infected them. So the app itself actually deletes the information on a rolling 21-day cycle as well, so it's not stored there indefinitely.
Good. And of course, we don't have a vaccine as such for COVID-19. We're using whatever means necessary to keep us all safe. And here's a new tool at the table.
That's right. And it's a really important tool because, as I said, it can really fast track that that contact tracing process. It enables us to identify people that might be at risk much quicker, get them into self-quarantine so that they're not then putting other people at risk. And overall, this is a really, one tool in our armoury against, in the fight against COVID-19.
Beautiful. Thank you very much for sharing. So it's easy to download.
Absolutely. You can download it on the App Store for the iPhones or through Google Play on Androids. Very easy to download.
Thank you very much for sharing. And a different world we're living in, and we're even looking at any tools we can to contain the virus. Dr. Christina, thank you very much. All the best to you and your deadly team and your family. Thanks. Stay safe, eh?
You too. You stay safe too. Thanks.
Bye-bye. A beautiful young lady, Dr. Christina Delange, her name is, working with the RACGP, that's the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, and in regarding, give us the understanding of COVID safe, and you can download that on your phone, your mob. It's about protecting everybody out there, protecting yourself as well, and so we can contain this virus. There is a safe spot for privacy in regard to your information, and the information is done privately, so it's all about contacting the health organisations of your state or your territory so we can contain this virus. Have a look at it, and if you want to add to the conversation, if you're using it, tell us how you're going with it. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Want to hear what you've got to say here on your First Nation radio station, and that daily number here is 1-800-422-416, and we're based here at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go via NERS, National Radio Service, and you're yarning with Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray Vinicari, the host for your daily program, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
on your mob. It's me, Bush Tucker Bungie, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Makaran.
National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
To Daily Mob, welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim Trinity, Trev Murray from Macquarie, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know it, BBM Bummer Bit Media, 98.7 FM. We go via NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your saber calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, To Daily Mob, now it is the International Year of Nurses and Midwives, and look, very, very deadly. I'm about to talk to Sister Renee Blackman and Sister Leonie West, talking about black people in control of their destiny. No shock to the system in regard to interview by Duchess of Cambridge, Her Royal Highness, that's Kate Middleton, and the girls will interview, and I've got them on the line. Very good morning, ladies. How are you?
Good morning, Trev. We're very good.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. Now, first of all, Renee Blackman, who your mob were you from?
So my mob are Gubby Gubby Mob from the Sunshine Coast, originally from down that way, southeast Queensland. So shout out to those fellas down there. Got a lot of family coming up the coast into Harvey Bay, and shout out to those guys and also the mob out at Cherbourg. Look, my heart lies in the northwest, though, and my family always wonder why. I decided to do my nursing career out this way, so I've been out this way for a fairly long time, working now with Gidji Healing, the Aboriginal Medical Service out here, as the CEO. So, as you know, that's a big thing for a nurse to be able to do that, my brother.
Yeah, fantastic. And Cousin Leonie, my sister, let the mob know who your mob were you from.
Yeah, deadly. As you know, Trev, we're proud Kalkadoon people. Kalkadoon and Mitikuti, born in Cloncurry, raised in Mount Isa, and on my beautiful dad's side, I'm a Dikangi woman.
Beautiful, fantastic. Now, shock to the system, well, in regards to, well, Her Royal Highness is shocked talking to First Nation people of this country, of the world, in regard to your interview, in regard to the International Year of Nurses. Look, very exciting, the interview that had taken place with you beautiful ladies. Go to you first, Sister Renee. How did this all come about regarding your interview by the Duchess of Cambridge, Her Royal Highness, Kate Middleton? How did that come about?
Look. First of all, we're contacted by the Office of the Chief Nurse in Queensland to see whether I wanted to do an interview with the International Council of Nurses. Now, here I was thinking, you know, oh, this is just, you know, would be great. Yes, absolutely. It's the International Year of the Nursing Midwife. Would be more than happy to do that. Once I got on the phone with those guys, though, they broke the news that, yes, while it was going to be launched as such, you know, it was Australia was one of seven countries that the royals wanted to interview to talk about, you know, our contribution to the COVID responses,
yes,
as well as congratulate nurses because it is the year of the nurse and midwife and we are facing a worldwide pandemic. So that was when the shock set in.
So you weren't given the heads up before, in advance,
no,
that you were going to be interviewed by Duchess of Cambridge, Her Royal Highness Kate Middleton.
That's right. No, we weren't. And it was a bit of a shock to the system to that they wanted to talk to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander nurses. Look, I thought that was fantastic of the Royal Family to want to talk to First Nations nurses, talk to us about our communities and really care about what we were doing out here to be able to keep our communities safe.
Sure, exactly. And also in the interview, make mention of Tanya Kidd, is that right?
Yeah, Tanya Kidd's a first-year practitioner out here. So she's 2 months out of her university degree and jumped into a nursing career and gets an interview with the Royals.
That looked too deadly. And like I said, representing your people in regard to this industry and the position that you hold, but regarding our people as a whole and speaking to the Royal, Your Royal Highness, and regard well, COVID-19 and the world that we're living in upside down at the moment and regarding COVID-19. So it was like, a beautiful conversation, but a very important conversation and a highlight conversation of your life, you could say.
Yeah, definitely a once-in-a-lifetime experience, Ali.
Yeah. Bigger than we thought, Trev. Like, you know, we were quite nervous about the interview. We only got told, I think, maybe 24 hours leading up to it.
Okay.
But definitely what we've woken up to this morning is way bigger than what we ever thought.
So we're talking a Zoom interview or telephone or a conference call, or how'd that come about?
Zoom. It was a Zoom, so we had Royal Your Honour. For God, look out! Cut me off there, Trev. We had Kate Middleton,
yes.
So the Royal Highness Kate. But we also had Sophie of Wessex was on the line with us as well. So Prince Edward's wife.
Okay, fantastic. Did you have any conversation regarding how you should title them, or how you should be standing or dressing or holding a lip to the left or which way? I don't know. Were you giving any heads up about that conversation?
Yeah,
protocol?
Yeah, definitely. Ren had to do a tester with them that afternoon, and then 20 minutes prior to us linking in, we also were told how we were to acknowledge them,
yes.
And it was either ma'am or Her Royal Highness.
Far out. There you go. I mean, talking about tongue in cheek and, you've got to watch that cursing too, you know, because you might have slipped that, which way that swear word might come out because that frustration or that nervousness. Too deadly. And so how long did the interview go for?
Not 10 minutes.
All right.
Yes.
And so you got to put across the table in regard to the interview, regarding our mob and how we are travelling in the 21st century, and we as the longest living culture on planet Earth, and COVID-19. So all within 10 minutes, tell us how the conversation went as such.
And you're right, we did. We really had, with some speaking notes, there were a lot of people giving us tips, especially Sister Roy Ann, giving us some
of course.
tips about what we wanted to get out there. We definitely did talk about, it was great that they gave us the room and the ability to be able to acknowledge Kalkadoon people, in terms of the space where we're based. But also talk about some of those real challenges facing our mob out in rural and remote settings and also in urban settings too.
Well, you're virtually painting a picture for the Her Royal Highness about how you work in this space. And of course, when we're talking about remote as well, and the footprint that you guys work in, it's astronomical. And people who work in the city or work in a palace wouldn't understand that.
Yep. That was some of the geography we cover, as well as some of the challenges we have around resourcing. That's a big thing for us out in the rural and remote space, getting the right type, the right amount of resourcing out, from flu vaccines through to PPE, that it's not easy to get that in supply.
Sure, exactly, exactly. So there was a powerful yarn that was going on with Her Royal Highness, Kate Middleton. When we talk about Mount Isa and northwest Queensland, in regards to COVID-19, any cases as such at this point in time?
No, Trev, none
good.
At the moment.
Good, and that's the goal, isn't it?
Oh, most definitely.
And how are our mob travelling in this space that we're living in at the moment, out your way?
Look, it's the one thing that's challenging for our mob, I think, because we're a together mob. We like seeing each other. We like being around each other.
It's want that hug and want that chum and that, high five and,
That's him, We like the face-to-face stuff. We like seeing each other, being around each other. And I think that social distancing, isolation, all those precautions that actually are going to keep people well has been challenging in the first instance. People do understand,
yes.
Though, the reasons why, because it also is about, our most we're a vulnerable community to start with, but then there's people even more vulnerable in our community, our elders, It's about protecting those people and making sure that, we're doing precautions to protect those mob,
Yeah, true, very true. For our daily listeners just tuned in, Trinity Trevor and Mike here, having a daily yarn with CEO of Gidja Healing, that's Renee Blackman, and Cousin Leonie West, who's a regional nurse at Mount Isa Hospital. And look, their beautiful interview with Duchess of Cambridge, Her Royal Highness, Kate Middleton, that's what we're talking about. And so powerful, that conversation, and surprise to the girls in regarding this interview being done in aid of the International Year of Nurses and Midwives. And we're talking about the Future Queen Consort here that you're having a conversation with, ladies. A very, hair-raising, here's a bald man talking, hair-raising conversation, but powerful in that sense. Yes, girls?
Yeah, Yeah, and that's what I said. Ren said, why are you so nervous? I said, hey, this is the future queenie.
That's
it. Yeah, that's right.
True. And look, you're all queens at heart, my sisters. Thank you very much for sharing. It's so powerful. And you represented, like I said, your industry, but you represented your mob across this nation regarding that conversation and the world that we're living with COVID-19. And hats off to all our doctors and nurses and people working front line globally. This is, like I said, something that governments and people of the world cannot fathom what's happening with the world at the moment, yes?
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yes.
And thank you, Trev. We've done, I think, 12 interviews today, yes. And the ones that we've enjoyed the most are the ones when we get to yarn with our own mob.
Yes, First Nation.
You know, and show our gratitude for this opportunity, and I just hope that we've represented our people well.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, well, you have, and I can vouch for that as running National Talk Black for 7-odd years, been in the industry for like 12-odd years. So, yes, thumbs up from this side, and not that, you know, the fact that we're cousin De Leone, and I'll give you my bank details later. And Sister Renee, thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thanks.
All the best to you, Deadly Mob, out there. And, put this, tick this box in regard to off your list, bucket list. Her Royal Highness can tick that as well. She spoke to Renee Blackman and Leona West.
That's right.
Too deadly. One love, my sisters. All the best, and take care and stay safe.
Deadly. Love you too.
Love you. Bye, girls. Too deadly. Beautiful yarn there with CEO of Gidji Healing. That's Renee Blackman and beautiful cousin Leona West. She's a regional nurse there at Mount Isa Hospital. And they were we were talking about their beautiful interview with the Duchess of Cambridge, Her Royal Highness Kate Middleton. And she's the future Queen of Consort. And we're talking about the international, well, the interview was about the International Year of Nurses and Midwives. And those beautiful ladies are representing our mob in this space regarding the work they do as professional nurses. And look, across the globe, as I mentioned, to all our doctors and nurses and people who work in front line in the hospitals and at medical centres, dealing with all our beautiful people out there regarding the COVID-19. So very important conversation, very important yarn, represented well. So Too Deadly, thank you very much. And also make mention of Tanya, our kid as well, who was in that interview, but not an interview I just had with Renee and Leona. Too Deadly Mob, this is your daily program, National Talk Black. Add to the conversation, 1-800-422-416. Yarn with Baldy One, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM, Bama Bipa Media, 98.7 FM. We go via NERS, National Digital Radio Service, and you can call us on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Too deadly.
Yeah, this is Mark Harbrow. You're tuning in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev on the mic.
1-800-422-416.
So, you got a little problem, have we? Never mind, you leave it all with us. We have the most advanced experiments in the world to make you better.
He's a modern doctor of psychiatry, and he's trained in Australian psychotherapy. And when something was, he says, bother me. He's a modern doctor of psychiatry. There's no money for research in psychiatry.
Society and the sick.
Yeah, Dude Daily Mob, welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It's come to the time where Murray got a sign up, and you local mob, stick around. Trendy Trevor will be taking you right through to 1 o'clock on the special COVID-19 program. But that daily number here is 1-800-422-416. Same number for your local mob as well. And we're live at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns as BBM Bumbabrit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. Great sharing with you, mob. But 24-7, you can text the brother as well, 045-714-0550. And we are going across the airways thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Look, a team effort, and big shout out to the staff here at BBM and the directors as well, board of directors. Chairperson, Gujul Gujul, thank you very much. Manager here, thank you very much, Jackie. And the Deadly team, is a team effort. Also, NERS, thank you very much and the work that you do to make this program go across the airways. Don't forget the COVID-19 number, phone number, Australian Government National COVID-19 helpline number, 1-800-020-080. The number again, 1-800-020-080. Stay safe, your mob. We'll be yarning soon. Stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. Too deadly. Thank you.
Yeah.